Hello, in this audio snippet, we'd like to talk about several things, and I believe this snippet may not be as long as other recordings we've done before. We just want to talk about a few things to kind of emphasize the condition we're in. And since we've already described the current condition in many ways, many times before, we don't want to beat a dead horse and repeat the same thing over and over again. And I think that's part of why this recording will probably be a little shorter than most. And I think that after this, we may start getting back to talking about certain things we need to finish out. Regarding, for example, the post-Civil War period in America and other things related to specific things related to the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. But even though we might be saying some of the things we've been saying before in this recording, I still feel the strong need that we need to say these things, and that's why we'll share them. So, first, I would like to go to this news story that came out recently. It was posted on the New York Post, nypost.com. So, I'm going to open it here and posted on the 20th of February, 2024, and by someone named Isabel Vincent. And the headline reads, "American family of Californian ballerina facing life in Russia for, quote, treason, plead for help freeing her." And they show a picture of this lady, and below the photo, there's a caption. It says here, "Ksenia Karolina, 32, had returned," and her first name is spelled here, Ksenia. And her surname is Carolina, Karelina. It's almost like Carolina, but with a K and an E instead of the O. And Ksenia, I've never heard that name. It must be a Russian name. Starts with a K as well. So Ksenia Karolina, 32. Had returned to her native Russia to see her parents, who had divorced. Now she's facing life in prison on charges of, quote, treason, with her American former in-laws pleading for help freeing her. It says here, a dual U.S.-Russian citizen being held in Russia on suspicion of treason for giving $50 to a Ukrainian charity, had traveled there to spend New Year's Eve with her family, the Post has learned. Ksenia Karolina's American mother-in-law and ex-husband are now pleading for help to have her freed and brought home to the U.S. It says here. Oh, and by the way, the caption, the picture that's shown at the top of this story shows her like in like ballerina type clothing, more or less, or a dance like a. Dressed like a dancer, and she is doing some sort of like ballerina move, and she's doing it on the Brooklyn Bridge. And so the Brooklyn Bridge is she's on the bridge, and one of the towers or whatever they're called of the bridge is seen behind her with all the cables and everything. It's a beautiful picture, and I think it's fitting that it's in the on the Brooklyn Bridge. Brooklyn represented, the revival of America, and I always knew that if America would revive, I would be in Brooklyn in one form or another. I've only been in Brooklyn one time in my whole life. Never been there since, and I don't think I'll ever be there again because America died. But it's fitting that she's on the Brooklyn Bridge, and like, leaping, she's doing like a she's up in the air, like a deer leaping for joy in freedom, but all of that's gone now. So it says here that 32-year-old amateur ballerina who manages a Beverly Hills spa was first arrested in January by local police in her hometown of Yekaterinburg and accused of petty hooliganism, according to Russia's ura.ru website. But she was then charged with treason held by the FSB, strongman, President Vladimir Putin's security service, before being paraded blindfolded and in handcuffs by masked security agents in a Russian courtroom Tuesday. The young woman was using coarse, obscene language in front of other citizens, was behaving rudely and defiantly, end quote, court officials told the local news outlet. When police were called, their arrival was said to have, quote, riled Carolina. She allegedly ignored the officer's commands and violently resisted arrest. On the 29th of January, Carolina was found guilty of hooliganism and sentenced to 14 days in jail. She filed a complaint about her arrest the next day, but the court rejected it. She was then charged under Article 275 of Russia's criminal code, which carries a prison term of 12 to 20 years. Carolina now faces life in prison, with the FSB alleging she donated $51.80 to Razom, a New York-based nonprofit, and accusing her of being a part of efforts to arm Ukrainian troops. Razom is Razom, or I don't know how to pronounce it, R-A-Z-O-M, is appalled by reports that a U.S.-Russian dual national has been arrested by Russian authorities for purportedly making a charitable donation to Razom for Ukraine in the immediate aftermath of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, said Dora Chomiak, Razom's CEO, in a statement to the Post. So it says here, it's unclear how they could know about any donations an American-based charity has received. A spokeswoman for the charity said they abide by privacy laws and do not share information about donors. Since February 2022, she has been proactively collecting funds in the interests of one of the Ukrainian organizations, which were subsequently used to purchase tactical medicine items, equipment, weapons, and ammunition by the armed forces of Ukraine, Russia's Federal Security Service said in a statement. So it says here, Razom, which did not return a request for comment, raises money for programs including medical aid, such as tourniquets, ambulances, and hospital equipment for the war-torn country. There's no suggestion it pays for arms. So it's a very sad thing, and there's a picture of her further down in the article. She's holding an American flag in her hands, the small flag, and she's standing in between two large flags that are taller than her, two large American flags. And she has her like U.S. citizenship thing in her hand, and she is just beaming, overjoyed. It says here down below, Russian-born Carolina celebrated becoming an American citizen in 2021. She immigrated on work-study visa in 2016 and married Evgeny Kavana of Baltimore, Maryland. So interesting, the connection to Baltimore, where I used to live. That's where I went to high school and university. And the connection to New York and Brooklyn. It's all interesting. So she's overjoyed, you know. And it says here, the keen amateur dancer took part in a 2017 photo shoot posing in Dumbo. I guess that's a ballerina move, I guess. In Dumbo, in front of the Manhattan Bridge. At the time, she was living in Baltimore. So she came to New York to pose for these pictures, living in Baltimore. Kind of a little bit like my story. I was in Baltimore. Well, it was reverse. We were in New York, then moved to Baltimore, and then I've ended up back in the New York area. I don't know. It's something that I'm connecting to, in a sense. It says here, so the family speaking for her and all that, defending her, that she's not a criminal, she's not that sort of person. It says here, the couple who were based in Maryland divorced a few years ago. Carolina studied dance at the Sergei Diaghilev Lyceum before graduating from Ural Federal University in 2003 or 2013. there's a typo here. According to her social media profile, it remains a keen amateur displaying her skill in a photo shoot on the Brooklyn Bridge and in Brooklyn's Dumbo. Oh, okay. I guess Dumbo is the place. Okay, sorry about that. All right. So, so the story goes on, and then it talks about Navalny's death and all that. But the reason why I mentioned that is that this story is not posted on the or linked to in any of the conservative websites that I go to, because it's not doesn't fit their agenda. This is something to be outraged about. A fellow American. She's now an American. So she's one of us, supposedly. And she's been arrested and faces 14 years in jail for donating $51.80 to Razam that provides medical supplies for war-torn Ukraine. And that is her crime. And now she's her life is ruined. I must be honest. I don't know what she was doing in Russia. Let me put it to you that way. She should not have been playing. sorry for the pun, but she was playing Russian roulette, you know, by going to Russia. You don't do that. It reminds me of a coworker I had at a place I used to work at. And she was Chinese, from China, and I guess she was already an American citizen. I never asked her, never got to know her well enough to know that. But she was, we were talking one day, and she said, "Oh, I'm traveling to China, and to visit my parents or whatever." Kind of similar to what this young lady did. And I said to myself, oh my goodness, I would cringe just at the very thought of going into China, because I would never know if I would be able to make it out again, because being an American citizen is not enough. And especially now with, you know, the people in the White House right now, who are so powerless, clueless, and so weak and lame, that there is, I mean, this is an American citizen being imprisoned in Russia, and that should cause outrage in America at the highest levels and in conservatives and everybody. But the conservatives don't talk about this because it just makes their Putin is our hero narrative look very bad. And on the other hand, the liberals, don't really, especially, you know, the Democrats, who are all talk, you know, they show at the end of the day that it's all talk and they don't mean anything that they say. And that's why they're so silent about this outrage. And you have to go to a place like the New York Post to find out about this. And it's interesting that she is being accused of treason. And yes, there is treason going on, but it's the treason of conservatives who have betrayed the truth in a most painful way, as we tried to explain in the previous recording. They have betrayed the truth, and this opened the door for things like this. And I feel sad, feel very bad for her, and I hope that her life is not destroyed by this, that she's able to somehow make it out of there. But she should not have to go through any of this. Clearly, you know, it's a very dictatorial, oppressive place. The shame she had to go there. She should have let go. And if her parents, if she wanted to see her parents, it might have been better for her to invite them to come to America than the other way around. But and if they couldn't see each other, well, I guess that's it. You know, there are other ways to see each other on the internet nowadays. So, she should not have gone back there, but unfortunately she did, and now we have this. And now she's being accused of treason, but yes, there's, as I said, treason going on, but it's treason of the conservatives who are defending this monster in Russia. And I don't care if Bite Me says he supports him. It does not matter. It's irrelevant. If a killer is a killer, he's a killer, no matter who or what defends or opposes him. It does not matter. the truth is the truth is the truth. And that's what, and that's why conservatives have betrayed the truth, because they don't look at the truth. They're not listening to the truth, to the full truth. They want to hear part of the truth, whatever is compatible with their ideology. And then they say, okay, I have all the truth I need. I don't need to hear anything else from the truth. And then they turn their back to the truth. And that's what they've done. They turn their back to the truth. They are traitors to the truth. And that's why this country is now dead. So now we wanted to share another story. So that treason has led to the condition that we're in, which is kind of manifested in these next stories we want to share. So one of them is this story of a 17-year-old. This was posted on the GatewayPundit.com conservative site, the one that we quote from very often. It was posted on the 21st of February, 2024, and the author of the article is a guy who we've criticized a great deal, Jim Hoft, who is one of the, I think, founders of this website. The headline reads, 17-year-old high school student dies at hospital after collapsing during fishing tournament weigh-in. It says here, the small town of Winnsboro, Texas, is mourning the loss of a beloved high school student and avid fisherman, Cale Robinson, who tragically passed away following a fishing tournament over the weekend. The 17-year-old junior at Winnsboro High School and member of the Winnsboro fishing team was competing at a tournament hosted by the Texas High School Bass Association at Lake Cypress Springs when he suddenly passed out during the weigh-in on Saturday. Despite being rushed to the hospital, Robinson could not be revived. No details have been released on the cause of death. And then it talks about, you know, what was posted online to announce, you know, with deep sorrow that he had died. And then this was posted by the Texas High School Bass Association. They posted it on Facebook. So they said a whole bunch of things about, you know, how sad it is and so on. And then at the end it says, today we pray for those whose hearts are laden with sadness and grief for losing a loved one. May they come to you, Jesus, to find rest for their weary hearts and broken spirit. I pray that you would guard their hearts and minds with the kind of peace that can only come from you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So that's how they ended their note. Now, there are several things, and this might sound picky, but for one thing, what is, obviously these people are Christian, and devout Christians, what is a group of devout Christians doing posting things to Facebook? I'm sorry to say, what is this obsession of Christians with Facebook? They know that there's a root of evil in that place. I had an account there. And I left it, like, after a few days. It's like I became aware that, what am I doing here? And I was drawing the wrong things, like the wrong people, the wrong attention. I don't know how to explain it. If I told you the details, you might understand what I'm trying to say. But I realized very quickly, you know, what am I doing here? And I got out of there. And the more I've been out of there, and I look at what fake, I call it fake book, represents, I'm just, you know, more and more convinced that I shouldn't be there, that it was right for me to leave, and that no person who has a deep commitment to the truth should be there. And that is my thought. I'm not saying, I'm not imposing that, but still, it bothers me, even though I don't feel the authority to impose it on other people. I do almost do that, you know, that imposing it on other people when I go, what are these people doing on Facebook? There's something just inherently, just deeply wrong with that site. It is contaminated with communion, matriarchal communion. And it's full of censorship. It's full of all these things. Why would you want to be there and give it any sort of credibility? And it doesn't say here whether the young man was sorry, was a Christian or not. Maybe it does say that, but I'd have to read through this. sorry. Oh, yes, it does say that. Beyond his sporting achievements, Cale was remembered for his warm smile, generous spirit, and the joy that he brought to those around him. He was a faithful member of Grace Fellowship in Winsboro, where he found a sense of community and solace. Now, I don't know, pardon my French, who the hell wrote this? And well, it supposedly it's Jim Hoft. He's not quoting from anybody else. This is not like a reposted article or anything. So it must be him, he who kind of came up with this. Or I don't know if he's quoting, inadvertently quoting from somewhere else. But as we've said before, people who use the word community have something wrong with them. And the problem is, he says he was a faithful member of Grace Fellowship in Winsboro, so that's obviously a church, where he found a sense of community and solace. See, you don't go to church to find a sense of community. I mean, that's what the matriarchal system is about, that we've tried to describe in these audio snippets and on the website where these recordings are posted. Community is where you hide in when you don't want to have a one-to-one encounter with the truth. That's where you hide, in the community, and you get absorbed into the community, and then you no longer are responsible for yourself, and then the community becomes the source of your provision, your comfort, and everything. That's why you don't go to, see, if Christianity is real, you should not be going to church to feel a sense of community. It's not a club, it's not a social club, and solace. Really, that's all you can go to church for, to find solace? I mean, how pathetic. How pathetic. Oh, pardon me for saying this. How pathetic. That's all that your God can provide for you? Solace? How sad. Instead of being conquerors, instead of being victors, instead of showing that male personality of conqueror that we've described, you know, there's judge, visionary, and conqueror. Those are the three male personalities. And then there's the server and organizer. And the server is the one like a nurse, you know. That's what predominates in the Christian church. And that's why they, you know, community and solace, those are things that are deeply tied to the server personality. Where people go, like, where the church becomes like nothing more than a hospital where people go and get healed from their wounds and their emotional distress. And that's all it is. It's not a place of preparation of people who will conquer the world, who will go out and achieve great things. None of that. It's just a place where people get psychological. It's like going to the psychiatrist. That's basically what going to church is. If that's all you find, community and solace. So Jim Hoft, I don't know, I get the feeling he got this from somewhere, having read something else about this young man, because why would he say that? And if it comes from him, it just also evidences the matriarchal nature of this fellow that we've criticized so much. But again, the interesting thing is, you know, no one mentioned, no details have been released on the cause of death. Why? I mean, why? And we all know why. So obviously in the comment section, everybody started talking about, for example, the first comment at the top here, it says, safe and effective has turned into sudden and unexpected. And then the ridiculous comment they always add, we need trials like Nuremberg, but for Big Pharma. And every time I read that, I get so annoyed. Not that I don't think these people have committed a great crime. It's just that the naivete required to say something like that. And that's part of what we want to talk about in this audio snippet, the naivete of the conservative traitors. That they have betrayed the truth, and then they turn around, continue with their lives, and they don't realize the naivete of their state of mind. This is so naive to think that you can have Nuremberg trials about this. Well, establish a constitutional system where such a thing would be possible, and then we'll talk. But right now, this is just just pipe dreams. That's all it is. Just delusions. that somehow this will be treated in like treason. These people are traitors, and they need to be judged and sentenced. And they always talk about that. They don't realize they themselves are the biggest traitors to this country when they betray the truth. And they think that, yeah, somehow magically, yes, Trump's going to rise to power and clean up house and put all the traitors in jail. I don't know. There's a certain naivete every time I hear that we need trials like Nuremberg for Big Pharma. But going back to this kid, you know, we don't know. So we are allowed to speculate. Why don't these people say the cause of death? It's clearly some sort of heart condition. And I would not be surprised if this kid took the injection. I mean, clearly, you know, not be surprised at all. And what is a Christian kid doing taking the injection? And again, it's the compromise, you know, that state of compromise. And this kid was 17 years old. 17, as I think we've shared before, is a number that represents revival and the manifestation of revival. And it's kind of interesting that he died at that age, as if to say the revival in America is dead because the people who could have led it were so compromised, so deeply compromised that they could not rise to the challenge. And he was a fishing enthusiast and apparently doing well, you know, competing at this tournament and all that. And fishing has to do with conquering, you know, conquerors are fishers in a sense. They conquer souls, they conquer people, they're fishers of men, shall we say. So he was manifesting a conqueror personality when he was going out fishing, and doing well at it, apparently. But that is all gone in America, that, the ability to conquer and to manifest the revival of this nation and the restoration of this nation is dead. And that's what this kid's death represents. And again, why? Because they compromised. And I know, I'm pretty certain the parents of this kid convinced him, and he willingly agreed to get injected. And now the consequence is he's gone. And all he could go, according to Jim Hoft, all he went to Grace Fellowship Church for was community and solace. So that's what killed his conqueror spirit, and the conqueror spirit of the Christians, the conservative Christians in America, the church system that is so matriarchal and anti male, because it hates judgments, it hates people who have visions that defy the traditional methods of the church. But are based on the truth, because that's what matters at the end. And they hate conquerors, or they kind of limit conquerors to just be conquerors when it comes to expanding the church ministry, but nothing else, because anything else is too dangerous to allow to flourish. So that's the consequence of our treason and our compromise. Now we have our revival and our conqueror qualities are gone. And another consequence is this story, we'll just say this very quickly, posted again on the same day, 21st of February, same day as the other story about the 17-year-old, if I remember correctly. And this was posted on on thegatewaypundit.com again. It says, report, under Joe Bite Me, the number of illegals who have entered the U.S. is greater than the population of 36 states. New analysis finds that the number of illegal immigrants who have entered the U.S. on Bite Me's watch is greater than the population of 36 states. The numbers are absolutely staggering. But then it says here, let me see here. Yeah, 7.2 million illegals entered the U.S. under Bite Me admin, an amount greater than 36 states. So 7.2 million have entered since that son of a bitch has been in the White House. Then they list the 36 states, including Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Oregon, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Utah, Vermont, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. So we just wanted to say that's where our country is. It's gone. It is ridiculous that these 36 states, there are 50 states in the country. That's 72% of all states. That's the number of people that have come in illegally with a third world mentality. The vast 99.999% majority of them. Very few came in who deserved to come in. So now the other story that we wanted to mention is posted on NOQreport.com, which, as we always say, redirects you to AmericaFirstReport.com, and it was posted on the 20th of February, and the headline reads, "On April 8th, the Great American Eclipse of 2024 will cross over seven U.S. locations named Nineveh." This was written by Michael Snyder, who writes, we've talked about him before. He sometimes writes these kind of Chicken Little stories where he's telling truths, but he seems to then exaggerate them and point them to this concept that he has about the traditional matriarchal Christian understanding of the end of the world kind of thing. But he does sometimes raise some good, valid points. And every article that is posted from him always starts with, in parentheses, the phrase, "end of the American dream," which I find interesting. So he is aware that the American dream is dead. It's just the conclusions that he draws from that are a little bit problematic. Let me read here. "I'm going to share something truly amazing with you in this article. And once again, a lot of naysayers out there will dismiss it as, quote, coincidence that really doesn't mean anything. But how is it possible that such a vast number of, quote, coincidences just happened to take place in April 2024? Last Friday, I told my core supporters about an amazing discovery regarding how the sun, the moon, and the seven other planets in our solar system will be aligned during the great American eclipse of April 8th. Okay, I didn't know that. And then it says here, "In this article, I'm going to focus on seven specific locations that are named Nineveh, which just happened to fall within the path of the Great American Eclipse on April the 8th. And it says here, "Let me start by going back almost 7 years. On the 21st of August 2017, the first Great American Eclipse made headlines all over the nation. It was also known as the Seven Salem Eclipse because the path of that eclipse crossed over seven U.S. locations named Salem, one in Oregon, Idaho, Wyoming, Nebraska, Missouri, Kentucky, and South Carolina." He says here, "Salem is short for Jerusalem, and that's why so many early Americans chose that name for their communities." Also, I don't think he's aware of this, maybe he is, that Salem is actually a form of Shalom. So maybe, yes, they might have taken it as a short for Jerusalem, but it also on its own means shalom, which means peace. Not sure if that matters anyway, but so he was mentioning talking about the eclipse of 2017, the one that happened 7 years ago, and now there's going to be one this year, the year of this recording, on April 8th, and we've talked about this in previous recordings, so we're not going to go into much detail about that. Those two, the path of those two eclipses are going to form an X over the country. And as we explained before, this is the truth was saying, you are crossed out, America. You're no longer relevant in the purposes of the end purposes of this planet. you are an irrelevant nation now. So it's as if the truth was crossing us out. And then it says, now they mention that he mentions the seven locations that are named Nineveh, over which the 2024 eclipse will pass. And there's a Nineveh in Texas, Missouri, it's interesting, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and New York. It says here, the eclipse will also cross over a location named Nineveh with an A instead of an E at the end, in the province of Nova Scotia in Canada. Okay, so that's why you sometimes see lists of eight Ninevehs on social media. In some of these locations, residents will be able to view a total solar eclipse, and in others, only a partial solar eclipse will be able to be viewed. So then he says, what do we know about Nineveh? So he starts saying some stuff about Nineveh, Nimrod, and we're not going to get into that because some of you may know from the website where we post these recordings. My understanding on all of that is a little different. But it's not important to mention right now. But it says here, I can understand how, but then he talks about Nineveh and Jonah being sent to Nineveh to, you know, get them to convert, it says in the Bible. So he associates it with Jonah and the conversion of the people. He talks about how there's a possibility, some people say, that there was an eclipse that happened at the same time that Jonah was in Nineveh, and that might have been part of why the people of Nineveh were so quick to listen to Jonah's message. Because Jonah, being a Jew, just showed up in Nineveh and started preaching, and everybody converted. And it was kind of strange because they embraced a stranger, a foreigner who came and gave them a different perspective on what their condition was. And they embraced it. And that's ironically one thing America didn't do. We've talked about this before, that America was supposed to be willing to listen to the voice of a, quote, foreigner, to tell them, to tell America what its condition was from an outside perspective that was not trapped in, you know, within the mire of the ideologies and the concepts inside America. Someone who could speak from an outside perspective and say things as they are. And Americans, especially conservatives, never said, no, if it's a foreigner, if it's not an American saying it with an American spirit, then no, we don't want to hear it. And so it's ironic that Jonah was a foreigner, came to Nineveh, according to the Bible, and everybody repented, and they had a conversion, according to the book of Jonah in the Bible. So he keeps talking about that, and he says some other things, but before I read the other things, the interesting thing, when he said Nineveh, I thought of something else completely different. I didn't even think of Jonah. I thought of Nahum. Nahum is another prophet in the Bible. That's not very well known. Most Christians who go to church usually use their Bibles for deodorant. They put it under their armpit to kind of absorb any perspiration. When their deodorant isn't, it's not doing its job. That's what they use it for most of the time. They don't read their Bibles. So it's not very well known, that book of Nahum, to most Christians. But the book of Nahum is kind of like a second, word, shall we say, that the Bible speaks out against the city of Nineveh. And it's a later word after what happened with Jonah. It's as if Jonah showed up at Nineveh and the people repented and they had a revival and restoration, but it only lasted a while, and then they went back to their old ways. And then the Bible kind of gives another warning, you could say, in the book of Nahum against Nineveh, and saying, now you're not going to escape and you're done. And Nineveh was at the end of the day destroyed. That whole kingdom, the people of that kingdom of Nineveh and its power was taken away and eventually destroyed, historically speaking. And that kind of, and to me, America is the Nineveh of Nahum, not the Nineveh of Jonah. Because as we said a moment ago, when foreign ideas came saying, hey, your constitution is not the most perfect thing in the world. Your founding fathers made mistakes. Doesn't mean that your country is evil and should be destroyed. It means that we just need to do a foundational transformation. We have to build everything up so that the things that your founding fathers that you worship love so much can really be protected. It's to complete your incompleteness. You have fundamental gaps and flaws in your system, and to defend the freedoms that you're so proud of, you need to redo the whole thing. And they said no. Jonah came and said it, and they said, no way, Jose, we're not doing that. What are you doing? You're not an American. You're an anti-American. You're a traitor to the country. Go to hell. And ironically, they were the ones who were betraying the truth. And they're the ones who sent America to the hell it's in now and will continue to be in forever and ever. So the thing is that the Nineveh that I think that this eclipse is referring to, as per this author, Michael Snyder, is the Nineveh of Nahum, the Nineveh that went back to its old ways, that said that had a temporary conversion, a temporary transformation, and then went back to its old ways and now must be destroyed. And that's what this second eclipse of 2024 is coming to certify, I believe. He does mention, just to finish out here in this article, he does mention that one of the more than 19,000 cities, towns, and villages in the U.S., the very first community in the U.S. that the path of the eclipse will touch will be Eagle Pass, Texas. Of course, Eagle Pass, Texas has become ground zero of the national immigration crisis. Just another coincidence? So, see this thing. If this was a good sign, why would it pass over Eagle Pass, which is the place through which all these illegal immigrants have come in? It says here, illegal immigrants crossing has overwhelmed nearly every sector in Eagle Pass, but state and federal responses have too weary residents say. The Del Rio sector, including Eagle Pass, reported 16,718 migrant arrests in January alone. So it's as if just like the illegal immigrants are coming to finish off and the destruction of this country, they're coming in through Eagle Pass. The eclipse is coming into the country through Eagle Pass as well. It's to say, I don't come here, bearing tidings of joy. I come here bearing tidings of your death, that you are dead. Then it says, he says here later, there's one more thing about the month of April that I wanted to mention. In late April, billions of 13-year cicadas and billions of 17-year cicadas will start emerging from the ground simultaneously for the first time since Thomas Jefferson was president. And then it says a narrow overlap. That's odd because the path of the Great American Eclipse of 2017 and the path of the Great American Eclipse of 2024 just happened to intersect Illinois. So he's talking about Illinois because this is happening. Apparently, there's an intersection of these cycles in Illinois. Yes, it says here. This year's dual emergence is a once-in-a-lifetime event. While any given 13-year brood and 17-year brood can occasionally merge at the same time. Each specific pair will see their cycles align only once every 221 years. 221 is 13 times 17. It's the minimum common multiple of 13 and 17, so that makes sense. What's more, this year's cicada groups, known as brood 8 and brood, I'm sorry, brood 13 and brood 14, happen to make their homes adjacent to one another with a narrow overlap in central Illinois. So then the author says, a narrow overlap in central Illinois? That's odd, because the path of the Great American Eclipse of 2017, the path of the Great American Eclipse of 2024, just happened to intersect in Illinois. A giant X over America is being formed by the path of these two eclipses, and that giant X will finally be completed on April 8th. So then he just says a few more things. And then at the end he says, just like the city of Nineveh in the ancient world, we're being given an opportunity to change direction. So so he has all these good point, interesting points, but the conclusions are always wrong at the end. So he thinks that we are being given an opportunity. No, I'm sorry. This is the X. X marks the spot where you bury the body. That's basically what the X is for. The X is not here to tell us how great we are. It's over. This is the Nineveh of Nahum, not the Nineveh of Jonah, because when Jonah came, they didn't listen. And the other thing, that they overlap in Illinois, and we've said this over and over again, Illinois is in particular Chicago is the capital of the matriarchal system in America. That's the stronghold. I mean, if the matriarchal system had a literal visible fortress, huge fortress that you could point to and they say that's where their fortress is, their headquarters is, it would be Illinois. So that's where the X crosses. That's also like a manifestation of why this country is dead, because of its Illinois. And 13 and 17, you know, that's 17 is again the number of a manifestation of revival, and 13 is the number of rebellion, and they are intersecting, you know, this year along with the eclipse, but that to me tells me that the X comes to mark the eclipse. The fact that these two broods are coming together exactly around the same time as the X is completed is to say the revivalist has been killed, has been X'd out. Maybe that's why Twitter is called X now. Now that I think about it, because it always bothers me why he changed the Elon Musk, why he changed the name to X. It makes no sense to me in the natural. There might be a good justification, I don't know. But the thing is that the 17 of America, the revival, the manifestation of that revival has been X'd out. And the 13 represents also the 13 colonies. As we said, America had a 13-day death. And each of the colonies, what it represented, died one colony per day. So to me, this is all very bad. But to Michael Snyder, it's a sign of hope, because they can't give up hope. Because it would mean having to admit that they believed in a system that was fundamentally flawed. They don't want to go there, and they will never go there. Sadly enough, and that's why we're dead. And the other story we wanted to read is from the dailymail.co.uk, posted on the 23rd of February, so that was the day before this recording. And I know this is going to sound bad, but I have to admit that it put a smile on my face to read this. And I'll share why. Let me read the headline first. It says, "One giant tumble for mankind. NASA confirms the $118 million Odysseus lunar aircraft has tipped over onto its side after failed landing on the moon. It says here, Odysseus is believed to be laying horizontal on the lunar surface after landing. Intuitive Machines said the soft landing was based on old data. So what happened was that there was an a story earlier about America sending this this thing to the moon, and that it landed successfully, that it landed well on the surface, and everybody was applauding. You know, there's a video of the people watching the thing monitoring the thing landing, and they started applauding because everything seemed to go well. And when I saw that, I said, oh, you know, that's a sign of America succeeding and all that. And I said, no, that can't be right. I just knew it could not be right. We talked about the slim thing, the Japanese thing that kind of landed on its head, literally. It's a figure as slim as we said before, I think, is severely limited into the material. And that's kind of manifested in that thing having its head buried into the dirt. That Japanese vessel. Because it's a figure of how Japanese culture has immersed itself into the natural, into the material, into the earthly, and it wants to avoid that there's the reality that there's something much deeper than what their scientific and their material understanding can comprehend. And that's why they landed like that. But when it was reported that America had landed something successfully on the moon, and it would landed well as compared to other scenario, you know, like the Japanese vessel, I said, no, that can't be right, because we are dead. We could not have done it right. I just knew it. There is no hope of revival, no hope of restoration, no hope of anything. So I knew it didn't make sense that thing landed correctly. And it was an American success. I knew it could not have been. So when I read this, I said, aha, I knew it. I knew it. It could not have happened like that. So it says here, NASA has confirmed that the first private-owned spacecraft to land on the moon has tipped over on its side, but is alive and well. That's what they say. Intuitive Machines had previously received data that its $118 million Odysseus was standing with his 6 feet on the ground, but updates revealed, there's a misspelling here, the lander is laying on the lunar landscape. The company noted one of the legs became caught, causing it to fall onto its side just one day after a white-knuckle touchdown that was confirmed as a soft landing. It says here, CEO Steve Altemus explained he and his team were not deliberately misleading the public when they shared on X, speaking of, about America's return to the lunar surface. They were just working with old telemetry, unquote. Working with old telemetry. And when I read that, I said, "What? Pardon my French, what the hell does that mean?" So they said, oh, we're not lying. We really thought we were there. We just used old telemetry. And I said, old telemetry, I mean, what is that? Telemetry from 10 years ago? What are you talking about? I mean, this thing just landed. It's not like you have like 10-year-old telemetry that to mislead you. What are you talking about? So it says here, Odysseus is believed to be getting solar power, but laying on its side is hindering radio transmission. So they're having a very difficult time hearing the thing. Altemus, whatever his name is, the CEO, explained in a press conference that the craft's foot caught the surface while moving sideways, resulting in the lander tipping onto a rock. The majority of the payloads are in view, allowing each to collect signs. We're hopeful the top deck solar array is not damaged and that the sun comes around the lander to get some power, said Altemus, as he used a model to show Odysseus' position on the moon. He continued to explain in the press conference that Odysseus has much of its operating abilities, regardless of being tipped over. Whatever. We do have communications with the lander and sending commands to the vehicle, Altemus said, adding that teams were working to obtain the first photo images from the lunar surface at the landing site. So they haven't been able to get a photo yet. And I find that interesting. Wouldn't that be one of the first things you would want to do? But they didn't, they haven't, it's been there for who knows how many days. When did it land? I forget. But it's been there long enough to take a picture. They haven't been able to get one. That makes me think. It says here, the company had said shortly after touchdown on Thursday. So this was Friday, Saturday. Yeah, a couple of days ago before this recording. That radio signals indicated Odysseus had landed in an upright position. But Altimus said that faulty conclusion was based on telemetry from before the landing. So that's what they called old telemetry. So measuring, like data that they measured before the landing, is what they used to say the landing had succeeded. So see how deceptive the verbiage is, old telemetry. It's like, in other words, they were using information from before the landing. Why? The landing was going to happen like a few minutes or seconds later. Why did they discard any information? I don't know. It makes no sense. It sounds like doublespeak. I'm not sure how to explain it. It just sounds like there's something not quite right. And that just goes to the core of America trying to pretend it's okay when it knows it's not okay. It's lying to itself. And that's kind of what this story is kind of is almost about. America saying we are fine. We are fine. Yeah, we just had a little bit of a mishap, but we're fine. We're doing fine, and we're going to succeed at the end. Intuitive Mission, a machine's mission director, Tim Crane, said the spacecraft burning a propulsion fuel of liquid methane and liquid oxygen for the first time in space performed flawlessly during its flight to the moon. It says here, the six-legged uncrewed robot spacecraft reached the lunar surface on Thursday after nail-biting final approach and descent, in which a problem surfaced with the lander's navigation system, requiring engineers on the ground to employ an untested workaround at the 11th hour. It also took some time after an anticipated radio blackout to reestablish communications with the spacecraft and determine its fate. Some 239,000 miles, or 384,000 kilometers from Earth. When contact was finally renewed, the signal was faint, confirming that the lander had touched down. However, the faint signal left mission control uncertain as to the precise condition and position of the vehicle. So they jumped the gun and said, yeah, we succeeded, we had a soft landing. But they weren't sure. They didn't know. Neither NASA nor Intuitive Machines have shared the next steps for Odysseus. Interesting. They haven't said what. Why not? Odysseus launched last week aboard a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral, Florida. So they keep talking about it, blah, 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 blah. After 15, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, after 15 tense minutes, you know, after it landed, the crew back on Earth finally received the lander signal confirming what they thought had been a success. So that's when they said, yeah, we made it, but we really didn't make it. So we wanted to share that. So that's the condition. It just reflects this denial that we're fine, but we're not fine. You know, just like Michael Snyder in his article on the eclipse. Oh, we are the Nineveh of Jonah, and there's signs of hope, and we will be back, and we're being given a second chance. No, we're not. No, we're not. I'm sorry, it's over. And he's talking about the eclipse entering the country through Eagle Pass. And it's not a coincidence that I felt led to share the article on the illegal aliens entering with a population larger than 36 states in the Union. And then the next article is about the eclipse entering through Eagle Pass, a kind of a central point of entry for illegal immigration into the country. Eagle Pass is known around the country about for being a place where illegal immigration is happening at a large scale. So that's not a coincidence. And it's because we have betrayed the truth, we have compromised, and we're trying to do it, you know, have our cake and eat it too. And that's why we don't want to admit that we're dead as a nation. So then that leads to naive optimism. And the naive optimism is being shown in these stories that we're about to read. One is, again, on thegatewaypundit.com and posted on the 23rd of February, 2024, the day before this recording. And it reads, Trump declares he will defend Christians from continued persecution and no one will take down, quote, cross of Christ, unquote, under a Trump administration. So he's speaking at an engagement at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee, where we've talked about treason. So interesting that he's in a place associated with treason. And we wanted to talk a little bit about Nashville, but for some reason, I feel like we're not supposed to. But Nashville has a lot to do, it's either the cause or the effect of why Tennessee is a place of treason. But we can't get into too much of that. For some reason, we just have to keep going. So the thing is that he's in Nashville, Tennessee. And he's talking to these religious people. So he's saying all this stuff. And when I read the headline, I said, what the hell are you talking about, Trump? What the hell? I mean, he will not let anyone take down the cross of Christ in the Trump administration. What the hell does that mean? And when they start talking like this, it angers me because, especially when Trump talks like this, because he sounds like he thinks that he can decree things into existence, the executive branch cannot do that on its own. I mean, our system is so broken that no one knows really where the limits of power of any branch, where the limits are anymore. But the thing is that he cannot just magically say, "Oh, I decree that no one will take down the cross of Christ," and just because I'm president, it's going to be so. I mean, that is naive thinking. That is like thinking that you have a magic wand and you will wave it, and then the problem will go away. The problem has been that the person holding the magic wand is not a good person. So all we need is to get the good person to hold the magic wand, and then the magic wand will do its magic. And that's naivete. And what? He's going to do some sort of executive order demanding that no one can take down a cross in a public place. What does that mean? Take down the cross of Christ. What does that mean? That he won't allow it to be taken down. Does that mean like in some public place, or what is he talking about? It's just gobbledygook. That's all it is. And he says, no one will be touching the cross of Christ under the Trump administration. I swear to you that will never happen. And it says here, which garnered loud applause from the audience. So the audience is just applauding, like, oh, you know, just being stirred to emotion. But no one said to themselves, what the hell does that mean? What does he mean by that? It's just an empty, empty, naive promise. Yeah, it says here, they want to tear down crosses where they can and cover them up with social justice flags. Trump added, but no one will be touching the cross of Christ under the Trump administration. Yeah, can you go to a particular state and say that's in that state, the citizens of that state cannot do that? If there's legislation at the state level that allows that sort of thing to happen? See, it's just naivete. No awareness of the condition we're in. He cannot just magically, just by being president, say to everyone what can or cannot be done, even if it's the right thing to say or do, you know. You can't. It's, we're not in that. It is naive. And also, the fact that the Christians need a president to fight their battles for them, it just shows how naive Christians are, how powerless and matriarchally inept they are, that they need a president or so-called president in the White House to fight their battles. Do you think that that's how the early Christians fought their battles? Oh, we need someone in the Roman Senate to fight for us, to fight for the Christian cause. They were getting massacred and eaten alive by lions in the Colosseum, being hung on crosses upside down, all these things. And eventually they brought down the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire had to yield to Christianity at the end. And then, you know, Christianity got corrupted, but that's another story. But the thing is that if Christianity had any power, it should be able to fight those battles on its own. They should be able to if their God was real, and if they were really operating in the truth, they should eventually be able to get people to drop dead if they ever so much as dare to touch a cross. I mean, that's the level where it should be. If God is real, then Christians should be expecting to eventually be able to do that. Maybe it won't happen immediately, but you know, they would be moving towards that. They would be cursing anyone who touches a cross or something, you know, or tries to desecrate a cross, and cause that person's life to be totally altered and completely destroyed from that day on, and to even drop dead at that moment, if their God was real, if their faith was real, and if their commitment to the truth was real, that's what should happen. But no, it doesn't happen, because these people are all matriarchal cowards. So they need some hero to come and fight their battles for them. And then there's a comment here that says, "Thank God Almighty for President Trump." That's all they get. They didn't ask themselves, how the hell is he going to do that? How in the world he could just issue these empty promises as if we're okay, instead of saying, why does he have to say that? Why can't we bring judgment on these people who are blaspheming and desecrating crosses or blaspheming against our God? Why can't we take them down? And I don't mean, you know, in a literal sense of going out and killing them with a machine gun or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, spiritually decreeing. If all of that is real, they should be able to bring judgment to these people and take them down. The growth of the movement of the revival would have gotten to the point where if their God was real and if they were following the truth, that they would be able to do that. That on the spot, just say the word of judgment against someone and the person dropping dead. Literally, in front of their eyes, without them touching them or shooting at them or doing anything to them, just other than speaking. But no, I mean, these people don't believe in any of that. They claim to believe in their Bible. They don't believe it. If they believed it, they'd be moving towards that. But in order for them to move towards that, they need to move away from the matriarchal system. But they don't want to do that. They want to have their cake and eat it too. So they want to stay matriarchal and have some majestic hero, political hero, doing their battles for them. So that it is what it is. Making empty promises. And continuing on the naivete theme, this article was posted again on the same day, the 23rd of February, 2024, same day as the other article. posted by Jim Hoff, the guy we criticize all the time. And it says, will President Trump lose to mail-in ballots and bad advice again? But he didn't write this. Jim Hoff posted it, but this is a guest post by someone else. So he copy-pasted an article from somewhere else. And I'm pretty sure with authorization, but he copy-pasted this article from somewhere else. So this was really written by Jay Valentine at OmegaForAmerica.com. So it says here, this person is talking about an interview that Laura Ingraham, a conservative here in America, had with it says here, in a February town hall with Laura Ingraham, President Trump said the way to overcome mail-in ballot fraud was to outrun it, get enough votes so it doesn't matter. His precise words were, quote, we will swamp it, unquote. Then he says, his nepotistic candidate for RNC co-chair said she would run the world's biggest ballot harvesting effort ever. So he's talking about Lara Trump. The RNC, the Republican National Committee, apparently the lady who was there, who was a traitor, Ronna McDaniels, either left or is leaving. So people are vying for the chair. And Trump has proposed Lara Trump. And I'm not sure what Lara Trump is to Donald Trump. And I should know this, to my shame, but I have no idea. I don't know if she's like a niece or something. I'm not sure. The thing is that... that's why he says his nepotistic candidate for RNC co-chair said she would run the world's biggest ballot harvesting ever. And as it says here, to people new to the voter fraud world, some things look easy but are infinitely more complicated. Unfortunately, Ms. Trump, i.e. Lara Trump, I think, the real data points quite a different picture. So he says, he says 2024 will be won in 15 counties across 7 states, period. Do you, dear reader, think Republicans starting in March or April can out-ballot harvest the leftists in 15 counties? The left has been running a ballot harvest and ballot manufacturing operation for decades, getting hundreds of thousands of previously unobtainable votes in Kansas, Alabama, Mississippi from evangelical churches and Kiwanis clubs. Getting Republicans to vote early means nothing. It does not change the electoral count in these 15 counties. Thus, the Republicans cannot win those 7 swing states. Here are the counties. In Arizona, Maricopa and Pima. North Carolina, Wake and Mecklenburg. Wisconsin, Milwaukee and Racine. Michigan, Wayne and Oakland. Pennsylvania, Philadelphia and Delaware. So Philadelphia apparently is a county in Pennsylvania, just like the city. So I guess the city of Philadelphia must be in the county of Philadelphia. And then there's a county called Delaware inside Pennsylvania. So that's the two they're referring to. Then Georgia, DeKalb, Gwinnett, and Fulton. And I think the biggest one there is Fulton. And then Nevada, Clark, and Washoe. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Clark County is where Las Vegas is. Okay. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the battlefield for 2024, those 15 counties in those 7 states. Now let's show how steep the hill is for those who think they're going to out-ballot harvest the left in these counties, since we have the undeliverable ballot database info for each one. It says here that in the Carrie Lake Camp election, the one in 2022 that was stolen from her in Arizona, that 20,000 new voters were added the day before the election in one county alone. Virtually all were illegally added. Anyone care to guess how you ballot harvest voters secretly added, invisible to the Republicans? So he's saying the Democrats added 20,000 votes the day before the election. So how can the Republicans go and go to the addresses of these people and ballot harvest their ballots if they don't know that they will be on the voter rolls until the day before the election? That's what he's saying. It says here, the Election Commission changed the zip code of thousands of voters the week mail-in ballots went out. So how do you ballot harvest those? Did the people even get those ballots? So they changed the zip codes of a lot of voters on the very week that the ballots went out. So that guarantees that the ballots, you know, will probably not make it to the people. So they might end up in the wrong hands, if you know what I mean. And maybe the post office will say, ah, we couldn't deliver it. So then they will just put it away. And somehow magically those ballots end up, you know, being sent somewhere else to the Democrat, you know, they get, someone gets hold of those ballots and then they fill them out for the person who was supposed to receive them. And then it says here, how about Wisconsin? In Wisconsin, illegal aliens are being added to voter rolls when getting driver's licenses. Lara Trump can ballot harvest all she wants in Wisconsin, but does anyone think she can outrun the illegals being registered? How about the 3 million inactive voters in the current roll? What about the over 450,000 clearly fake people addresses, address combinations found on those rolls in 2022 and 2023? Maybe Trump can outrun in Georgia. Then it says here, Fractal published a video on the Omega 4 America website digitally recreating the 2020 Georgia election. You can go there and see the type of anomalies built into the wildly inaccurate Georgia voter rolls. People, they are still there. Ballot harvest, all you want, but the leftists will continue to vote for people who are not on the voter rolls. They will vote for people who moved. As we clearly showed using USPS National Change of Address Database for Georgia. The numbers are in the tens of thousands. It's going to take a lot of smiles and dials from the new RNC to outrun that. Then he says, okay, maybe Nevada. And he says that sarcastically. Nevada had an election this month and their voter history rules were shown to be wildly out of date. If you want to ballot harvest, you need to know two things. Did the person vote before? Is that person at that address? The voter history record, which even the Nevada government cannot get straight, is incorrect. That destroys ballot harvesting. Scratch Nevada. It goes on and on. He goes into this deep explanation. Michigan has the same challenge of illegal aliens getting driver licenses. As long as they're legally present, although illegally arrived, they're good to go. From there, getting registered to vote is a small step. And Michigan ran one of the most egregious ballot manufacturing operations. Ballot harvesting cannot harvest more ballots than ballot manufacturing can create. And Michigan will do it again. You know, because Michigan was the place where the 3 a.m. truck, a van showed up. And through the back door, lots of ballots were, you know, brought in to be counted. So, you know, how do you out harvest that? It says there are roughly 161 million voters. However, they change status. Some move, some die, some live in transient addresses like RV parks, hotels, big in Nevada, North Carolina, and in hospitals they live as well. Fractal has almost 2 billion records because Fractal, a quantum technology, tracks voter movements. It says here, for instance, in Alaska, Mississippi, Alabama, Texas, Ohio, and every swing state above, we not only know that Phineas lives and votes for a college dorm, from a college dorm, hotel, or RV park. We know Phineas has been doing it for 20 years. We built the undeliverable ballot database because our time series analysis across 66 copies of Pennsylvania voter roll show Phineas has been voting from his college dorm for 19 years. So Phineas must be some individual, some example that he's pulling up here. Only Republicans believe Phineas is still a college student. So he's giving all these details. It says here, there are over 450,000 in swing states, apartment addresses. And everyone receives a ballot in 2024. The ballot accumulates on the floor, is returned to the Postal Service, or picked up by a leftist runner. We have testimony from postal carriers that those ballots are given to leftist groups. So how exactly can the Republicans out-ballot harvest those? It says here, Fractal found in Wisconsin, found a college dorm with 1,500, 1,500 active voters. The dorm manager says only 250 students live there at any one time. Ballot harvest all you want. That dorm will cast over 1,000 ballots in 2024. Think they're for Trump? Multiply this by the hundreds of thousands, and we demonstrate in every state that there are enough anomalous voters to change statewide elections. We just did this for legislators in Minnesota, Alaska, Mississippi, Alabama, Ohio, and of course, every swing state. So why aren't we into ballot harvesting? Ballot harvesting requires good lists. So it just keeps going and going, the article here. It says, if you think Trump will win the swing states by over 8% ballot harvest, if you think Trump cannot swamp them by over 8%, then go to bed early November 5th. The leftists will do it to you again. It's in the data for all to see. But I want to find something this person said. At the very top of the article, he says, and I skipped it, it said, when asked to identify the most fundamental problem in the past Trump administration, the almost universal reply is President Trump surrounded himself with people who gave bad advice or stabbed him in the back. So now, and then he mentions Lara Trump as an example, maybe not of someone stabbing him in the back, but at least giving him very bad advice. It's the naivete. You know, he is a terrible judge of character, naive to a fault, and arrogant at the same time about his abilities. So you get a person who is naive and arrogant about his abilities. You combine those two things, and it's just a recipe for disaster. Because once he naively accepts an idea, there's no way you can get it out of his head, because he becomes convinced that that's the way to go and that he knows what he's doing. So that's what we wanted to say, that just shows the naivete. He thinks he can take down, he will stop anyone taking down crosses by decree. He thinks that he's taking the advice that, yeah, we'll just outvote these people and out ballot harvest the corruption, but he doesn't offer any specifics on how to eliminate voter fraud, even if it's not for his own sake. I mean, even if it's just for the sake of the country, he doesn't even go down that route. Okay, whether I win or do not win, we need to make these changes to our election system. This, so that we can have a viable democracy in the years to come. He doesn't even go there. He's not that type of thinker. And just as another article that we want to mention quickly here, was posted on the New York Post, in other words, nypost.com, and it was published on the 21st of February, 2024. It says New York City law that would have NYC or New York City law that would have allowed 800,000 non-citizens to vote struck as unconstitutional by appeals court, enacted in violation. And this sounds like a good thing. Oh yeah, there was a law that was passed in New York City that would allow 800,000 non-citizens but legal residents to vote in municipal elections. But when I read that, I said, you know, could it have been that our constitution finally worked? But I said, no, that can't be. So that's why I was drawn to read the article. And the article, it started talking about the constitution they were talking about is the state constitution. So it violated something in the New York state constitution. That's why it was declared null and void. But the reason why I'm mentioning this is that it just highlights the nature of the problem, that yes, they can argue about things at the state level, but it's all at the state level because the Constitution has surrendered all authority, on the voting process to the states. It clearly says it in the U.S. Constitution that the states are the ones who decide on the laws and the regulations regarding voting, and it doesn't restrict it to just local elections. It's for any elections, and can you imagine, you know, having to fight this battle at every state to clean up the voter rolls and to kind of prevent illegal aliens voting? Because what happens, for example, in California and other places, they allow illegals to get driver's licenses. And the moment they get driver's license, they get registered. 'Cause they ask you, do you want to enroll in the voter registration? And they register them automatically. And if the state says we want illegal aliens to vote in our elections, then they are allowed. The U.S. Constitution cannot do a thing about it. The federal government cannot do a thing about it. But the moment these people are on the voter rolls to vote at the state level, they automatically, you know, it almost becomes automatic because the system is the same. So they end up also being given a ballot to vote for in the national election, and no one is the wiser about it. And so is this naive idea that, yeah, we just have to outmaneuver and outvote these people and just go and, vote on in mass, and somehow we will overwhelm the corruption? It's just naive. And it shows, and instead of somebody saying, okay, there's something fundamentally wrong with the system, we need to fix it, we just keep pretending. We're living the lie. That's what we're living. So that's why I wanted to mention that. And let me just, without going into too many details, and I won't mention the article. I mean, there's a reason why I can't say too much for some reason. There was someone from a foreign country who was invited to speak at the CPAC thing, this conservative mutual patting in the back type of conference that happens every year in America. It's all these conservatives to kind of like go into this echo chamber and say how great they are, how great their ideas are, and they just repeat the same rubbish every year, and it never goes anywhere. But no one goes there to challenge them. And I wish someone would go and say, okay, you have this wrong, you need to change this, you need to change that. And someone from another country came and kind of did that, and started doing doing that. But the thing that drew my attention is that this leader from another country started talking about the need to change the system, to come up with new ideas, to change things. And from what I could read, it was like a generic, he was speaking in general terms, but the language that he was using, from what I could read, was kind of going in that direction of saying, I'll read the quote. I won't say who he is. I don't want to go there because that means going into other stuff, and I feel like I should not go there. So he said, quote, "The next president of the United States must not only win an election, he must have the vision, the will, and the courage to do whatever it takes. And above all, he must be able to identify the underlying forces that will conspire against them. These dark forces are already taking over your country. You may not see it yet, but it's already happening." So he does not really, I think he does not have enough vision to really see what's wrong with the country, maybe because he's not here. But I think that even if he was here, he might not be able to see many of the things that we talk about in these recordings. But at least the general idea, I mean, the fact that he even goes there is remarkable to me. And it's sad that it has to be an outsider who comes and say this. You know, he must not just win an election, he must have a vision. So does Trump have a vision? I don't think so. What is his vision? What is, where does he want to take the country, to transform the country, the foundation of the country? All he wants is to be in power, and then, you know, he's going to jack up energy production, domestic energy production, and maybe restore the economy and what. And in the meantime, he's going to have a whole bunch of people surrounding him who are going to conspire against him, stab him in the back, and then the Democrats are going to try to impeach him and do some dirty dealings, and then break out another virus, and then it will all be over. That's not vision. That's not vision. He does not, and then the will and the courage to do whatever it takes. Trump never had the courage to do whatever it takes because he believes in the art of the deal. He's willing to compromise. He said it. We have to compromise on abortion. We have to let fetuses die because we need to win elections. Does that sound like someone who does whatever it takes, to have the courage to do whatever it takes? No, it doesn't. And it's sad that someone from the outside has to say these. And we here in the U.S. are too naive to even go there. As I said, this man who spoke at least had the vision to say these things, but he didn't go into the details of the things that really need to be changed. And I don't think he knows them, but if he did and he said them out loud at that CPAC convention, instead of all the applause he got, he would have been booed out of the place, because conservatives are naive and they have betrayed the truth, and because they have betrayed the truth, they are in this state of naivete that they think that what they have is enough to change things. They don't understand that they need something else. And I do want to read another story that I didn't have here. So, and this will be the last thing. I thought this audio recording was going to be very short, but as always, it always tends to prolong itself. So let me read this. Let me see. Oh, it's not here. I hope I can find it. Very quickly. Oh my goodness. Let me see if I can find it. I think it was posted on the New York Post. Maybe that's why I'm not finding it. Yes, here it is. Okay. This is a very sad story, and I think it has a message about what's coming to the country. It says, girl who died in Florida sand hole while digging with her brother at beach identifies a 7-year-old from Indiana. This was published on the New York Post, nypost.com, on the 21st of February, 2024. It says, the 7-year-old girl who became trapped in a sand hole with her brother while they were digging at a Florida beach Tuesday was visiting the state from Indiana with her family. Despite frantic rescue efforts, Sloane Mattingly of Fort Wayne died after being submerged in sand for roughly 20 minutes. Her brother, 9-year-old Maddox, M-A-D-D-O-X, was pulled out by his father and survived. The children and their mother and father were visiting Lauderdale by the sea on vacation, according to reports. Sloane's stricken father, Jason Mattingly, posted a brief note on his home improvement business's Facebook referencing the tragedy. And again, what is this thing with people posting on Facebook? It just annoys me to no end. Please be patient as we're dealing with the loss of our daughter, he said. He told Wayne 15 that Sloane, Wayne 15 must be a radio station or TV station, I'm not sure. He told Wayne, W-A-N-E, those must be the call letters of the TV television station, I guess. He told W-A-N-E 15, or Channel 15, I guess, that Sloane, who became trapped underneath her brother in the roughly 5-foot deep hole, was always smiling and full of love and life. And there's a picture of her smiling, doing a heart-shaped thing with her hands. A very cute little girl on the beach. Very, very sad story. says here, the shattered principal at Sloan and Maddox's elementary school issued a statement about the incident Wednesday. It is with heavy heart that I write this, letting you know that we lost a precious member of the Lafayette Meadows school family, wrote Jenny Fadil of Lafayette Meadows Elementary School. Sloan Mattingly was a bright, sweet, loving first grade student in Miss Van Brocklin's class. Sloan passed away on Tuesday. So she was digging a hole, like kids doing, you know, playing in the sand. And apparently she was digging a hole and the hole caved in on her, like the sort of sinkhole, and she fell in, and her brother, you know, fell in as well on top of her apparently. And then the sand just, you know, came in and just buried them. It says here, she was taken to Broward Health Medical Center in Fort Lauderdale, where she was pronounced dead. I find this very sad, but what caught my attention, why I felt drawn to this, is two things, but most importantly, when I read that she was from Fort Wayne, and that struck me very deeply, because you may know from if you visit the website where these recordings are posted, you may be aware of a posting called Wayne's World, you know, kind of like the movie Wayne's World. But Wayne's World is about Fort Wayne, Indiana, and it talks about the relevance of Fort Wayne, how it represents a bubble of protection for the righteous in the midst of this transition that we were having in the country as we were hopefully going towards a revival. But the revival died. And it's interesting that, this lady, the little girl, was from Fort Wayne. And she, instead of being enveloped in a bubble of protection, she was swallowed up by the sand and killed. And there was no bubble of protection to protect her, you know, whilst in the midst of the sand. If you see what I'm saying, you know, she could not breathe, and I guess that's what must have killed her. You know, she literally asphyxiated and drowned in the sand. So it's almost like a figure of the bubble of protection being taken away. Like America no longer has that protection over the righteous people. You know, what I call the remnant, those true seekers. That bubble of protection is like gone. It's there for those who don't compromise, but the country's in such a terrible state that if you start compromising and doing all sorts of things, then the bubble of protection will be taken from you and you'll be swallowed and killed mercilessly. And that's one of the reasons why I feel this urge that I have to leave the country in the not too distant future, because if I stay here too long, they will kill me here. Literally, and it will probably be, some white liberal American. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happened at the end. But or who knows, or some other way to, you know. But there is, the protection is gone. If you're before, you know, if you stay true, and you could have some flaws, but you would be protected. But now it's like the situation is so dire now that it's so dangerous. And that's why I find that interesting that she's from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and in Florida. And Florida is supposed to be this haven of protection for freedom. And I have thought at times that maybe I should go down there. Maybe I might end up being there for a while before I leave the country. Who knows? I have no idea what the truth has for me. But the thing is that Florida is supposed to be a place of where you're safe from a lot of the rubbish that's going on in the country. And that's where she ends up dying too. It's like as if the truth were saying there is no place of protection. There's no place where you can go and hide and cover yourself from all that's going on, because that's how bad it is. And the interesting thing is that I find it interesting also that the daughter, the young girl, the 7-year-old young girl died, but her 9-year-old brother lived. And you would think, well, isn't that like almost the fact that the brother was able to live a good sign because he's a male? And unfortunately, the little girl, the female, died, and there may be a sign of hope that the matriarchy will end or something like that, but it doesn't resonate. And the reason why it doesn't resonate, it's two things. First of all, you know, for the matriarchy to be destroyed doesn't involve killing a sister. You know, if this was an evil little girl, I would understand that, but it doesn't jive. It doesn't match. The thing is that, and the other reason why it doesn't jive is the names. Sloane, I looked it up, and let me look it up again, the meaning of the name. It says, Sloane is a gender-neutral name of Irish origin that translates to raider or warrior. It is an anglicized form of the Irish surname, and there we go with the Irish stuff, O'Slaugadáin. I have no idea how it's pronounced in Celtic. O'Slaugadáin, whatever. And is often associated with tales of brave leaders. So, see, she was a warrior. She was the male one. Her name was a male one, even though it was gender neutral. But she was the male one in the story. She was the warrior. That's the conqueror personality. Conquerors or warriors. So, you know, one of the three male personalities, judge, visionary, and conqueror. She had a male personality. And she represented the male. And she had a gender-neutral name. So it's like she was like a... She had a name that could be taken like the name of the male. So she represents... She actually, in a kind of weird way, even though she was the female in the story, she represented the death of the male endowments in America. And then the name of the brother who did survive, his name is Maddox, and Maddox means, it says here, the name Maddox is a combination of two elements, mad, which means fortunate or fortunate one, and dox, D-O-X, which means son of. Together, the name can be translated to mean fortunate son. It's a sweet, meaningful name for a boy, and one that can give a sense of pride and purpose, whatever. I'm reading another from the Wikipedia article on the name Maddox. It says here, Maddox is a mainly male name in use in English-speaking countries, derived from a Welsh surname meaning son of Maddox. The name Maddox, M-A-D-O-C, means fortunate. So interesting, both names have Celtic origins, Sloane and Maddox. But the Maddox just means son of a fortunate one. So, you know, someone who's lucky. And, you know, this kid was fortunate to survive this horrible thing. But it's more of a passive name, if you see what I'm saying. So it's a more feminine matriarchal name. Because it's someone who receives fortune instead of a warrior who goes out and takes the loot. If the fortunate one has the loot given to them, if you see what I'm saying. So it's a more passive name. It's a more matriarchal name. And it's interesting that both are Celtic and Irish. Celtic in origin, the names of both. And I guess it kind of points to the betrayal that led to this death that we're experiencing, the death of the male qualities of this country, and because the female qualities are the ones who have predominated, and so on. So, in short, this audio snippet was basically a first kind of emphasizing that we, that conservatives have carried out a deep level of betrayal, deep level of treason. And it's manifested by, you know, the what happened with this Russian America, this dual citizen, Ksenia Karolina, we were talking about at the beginning, and how she's now trapped by Vladimir Putin, and is being threatened with 12 years of jail for giving $54 to a Ukrainian charity. And this is the monster that the conservatives are defending. They're willing to turn their backs on the truth to defend this monster just to maintain their talking points. And it's ironic that this young lady, Ksenia Karolina, is being accused of treason. But the fact that she's being accused of treason is actually, ironically, a confirmation that the truth is accusing conservatives of being traitors to the truth. Because not a single conservative gives a penny for the condition of this lady, because that would mean having to admit to the brutality and the evil of Vladimir, son of a bitch, but Putin. And so that's what we talked about at the beginning. And then we began to talk about how we talked about the 17-year-old high school student who apparently was a Christian and who died suddenly because, you know, he was in a state of compromise, and that's representative of how our 17, our revival, our manifestation of greatness that was there waiting, has died because we compromised the truth. We turned our back on the truth. We started compromising the truth, and that's when that's why our revival died. And now we're in a situation where we're being flooded with the equivalent of the population of 36 states in just a short period of time, and then we talked about the April 8th eclipse and how it speaks of us being more of a Nineveh under Nahum than a Nineveh under Jonah. But the conservatives naively cling to this idea that that we are the Nineveh of Jonah that had a chance of repentance, when clearly we do not, and it's shown by the fact that the eclipse is entering the country through Eagle Pass, and Eagle Pass represents the illegal immigration that is flooding this land. It's like these two stories combine to show the naivete. It's the state of naivete that we're in, especially conservatives. And then we talked about the NASA Odysseus thing tipping over. And it's a figure of us thinking, yeah, we are okay, and we just have a few glitches. And we're lying to ourselves, trying to make ourselves think that we are okay, because we're in that state of denial, of naive denial. And it's all the result of us having betrayed the truth and compromised the truth, just to get our point across, or just to get along. And that naivete, we emphasized it even. These stories emphasize it even more. For example, when we talked about Trump saying, "I will make sure no one takes down a Christian cross when I am president." How do you do that? You know, you can't just wave a wand and make everybody respect Christians. You can't do that. And the Christians, instead of saying, "Hey, this is our battle. We should be tearing down strongholds. We should be making people drop dead if they so much as blaspheme the name of Jesus or whatever." They should be able to should be doing those battles. But no, they're waiting. They're naively waiting for some sort of a legislative thing to happen, some president, somebody who will magically make all these problems disappear so they can return to their passive matriarchal state. Well, they are that they don't have to return to it. They remain in it. But I mean, in the sense of having being able to return with return to the idea that they can stay there without any consequence in that state. And then we talked about the, you know, the naivete of conservatives thinking, yeah, we can win the election. We just have to out ballot harvest the opposition and take, you know, get out the vote more than the amount of fraudulent votes, and we'll win. It's just naive thinking. And we talked about, you know, we read through the article. It just tries to explain how naive that thinking is, and how Trump continues to take bad advice from people who don't know what the hell they're doing. Because Trump has no vision. He's an empty vessel in that sense. So they can fill him with, you know, little ideas, and if they sound fancy and slick, he goes with them. And he has no larger vision. It's a naive, simplistic world that Trump and his followers live in, and conservatives in general. We talked about the New York City issue about, you know, even though it looked like a victory, the fact that they voted down a law was struck that allowed non citizens to vote was struck down. It looks like a sign of hope, but it just shows they struck it down because it violated the state constitution, not the U.S. Constitution, the state constitution. So just emphasizes how the battle is so localized because the U.S. Constitution has made it so that we're in a situation where if we don't change the whole structure, we don't change the we don't have a paradigm shift, a complete paradigm shift, then it's impossible to ever end the voter fraud and total decay that we have right now. And I don't know if it was mentioned in the article, but I also think about the fact that in Fulton County, for example, and I'm sure in other places, they literally ejected the Republican observers from the voter of the rooms where they were voting, counting the ballots. And no one could protest anything. How can that be? They take out the Republican observers. They keep counting behind closed doors with the Republican observers, you know, having been kicked outside, and no one can do anything about that. And no one is even going there talking about, let's have legislation that prevents that sort of thing. Let's standardize these things. Let's sort it out. No. We are fine. It's just these evil Democrats that are just. It's doing all these shenanigans like mosquitoes. Let's just ignore them and let's just fight harder and somehow, rah, 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 we're going to win. It's just a total naivete. And then there was this guy from a place that I shall not mention coming to CPAC, kind of insinuating we need not just to win an election, we need a vision and a willingness to do whatever it takes to achieve the vision. But they can applaud to it because the words sound nice and because he didn't give any details. But, I don't mean that as a great criticism. It's just that, you know, his understanding is limited. He has some sort of vision, but his understanding is limited and he's not immersed in the country or, you know, enough to understand it, what's going on. Maybe, I don't know. The thing is that, he didn't give any details, and that's why everybody applauded at CPAC, but no one got the message. They're just applauding the words because they sound nice, but they don't understand the implications of the words. And we continue in that naive state, and that's why the country is dead. A country of traitors, a country of compromisers, and a country that keeps... that stays in a state of denial, in a state of naive denial, unwilling to recognize that it is all over, and that we are a Nineveh under Nahum's indictment, and we'll be collapsing. We're dead already. We'll just finish collapsing over the coming years, and pretty soon it'll be very evident that America is no longer relevant in the world. Thank you very much for listening.